The following is a repeat broadcast of the Global Research News Hour, originally airing September 15th, 2023. Was man-made CO2-induced climate change really at the heart of what caused all the horrific wildfires across Canada this summer? Why is media coverage of direct energy weapons, HAARP, and other environmental modifications technologies not been addressed in mainstream media? Is the system of peer review articles on climate change itself a controlled strategy of Rockefeller, Gates, and the billionaires? Is the division between Alberta and the rest of Canada stemming from something less connected with climate change ignorance and more related to the anticipated damage of a new national energy? This week on the Global Research News Hour, we are addressing the wildfires that have ravaged much of the forests of Canada, along with Maui and other places, and the tendency to blame it all on climate change. We ask if there are other interests at stake which are using the fight against climate change as a mask. In our first half hour, we speak to Peter Koenig about the prospect of elites having the ability and the motive to cash in on a devastated planet and advance the prospects of the World Economic Forum's Great Reset. And in our second half hour, we talk to Alberta Professor Anthony Hall about how climate change fakery is driving increasing divides between Alberta and the rest of Canada. On this week's program, Problem, Reaction, Solution: Wildfires About More Than CO2-Induced Climate Change. Bringing you the analysis beyond the media headlines, the Global Research News Hour is on the air. Welcome to the Global Research News Hour for the week of September 15th, 2023. The program is funded by the Center for Research on Globalization and produced in collaboration with campus community radio station CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. I'm your host, Michael Welch. The show seeks to provide listeners with access to analysis of some of the major issues shaping our world today from thinkers, researchers, and unique political personalities rarely addressed by major media. Our shows are featured on partner radio stations across Canada and the United States and available for streaming or download at the site globalresearch.ca. We acknowledge that this program was produced on the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe, Innu, Oji-Cree, Dene, and Dakota, the birthplace of the Métis Nation and the heart of the Métis Nation homeland. Settlers established access to the resources of the land and water at the expense of, and through lies to, the Indigenous population. We will devote time and energy toward reparations and reverse the crimes of colonization and genocide by which we established our current advantages. Now it's time for News Notes, a sampling of articles from the Global Research News site. Listeners should know that some of the articles may run against common messaging about sensitive subjects and are not all endorsed by this radio station. We have already seen how the Ukrainian plan to finish off the Donbass was conceived as a carbon copy of the Croatian Operation Storm of August 1995. That ghastly undertaking, which the Kiev regime was eager to emulate, resulted in the killing of thousands of civilians, forced expulsion of a quarter of a million Krajina Serbs, and the incorporation of their homeland into Croatia. The difference is that the Croat plan was resoundingly successful in reaching its barbaric objectives. The Ukrainian copycat plan, on the other hand, was a manifest failure. Its execution was unexpectedly thwarted by the special military operation. That comes from the article, Kiev Regime's Plan to Finish Off Donbass, a carbon copy of Croatia's 1992 Operation Storm, by Stephen Karganovic, posted September 13th. 84% of all teen overdose deaths in 2021 were related to fentanyl. Fentanyl-related adolescent overdose deaths nearly tripled between 2019 and 2021, and a quarter of those deaths involved counterfeit drugs, pills like Valium, Xanax, or Percocet, often obtained from friends or brought through social media. Fentanyl is an incredibly potent synthetic opioid. It's 50 times stronger than heroin and 100 times stronger than morphine. Just 2 milligrams equal to 10 to 15 grains of table salt can be lethal. That comes from the article, Opioids, Fentanyl-Related Teen Drug Overdose Deaths Triple in 3 Years, by Dr. Joseph Mercola, posted September 13th, originally published on the Mercola website. At the far end of the 18th summit, the African Union, AU, was finally granted the same status as the European Union, EU, at G20. This will strengthen the G20 and also strengthen the voice of the Global South. It is based on the group's collective consensus and incorporated into the final declaration, marks a new chapter for formulating new thinking and building confidence with G20 members. Within the framework of the emerging new world order, the G20 Delhi Declaration's language was neutrally positive. The most significant outcomes remain the inclusion of the African Union into the bloc. The summit declaration was termed people-centric, action-oriented, and far-sighted, reflecting a, quote, shared path for all, unquote, ensuring that countries of the Global South are not left behind. That comes from the article, African Union's Relations with Global Players, by Professor Maurice Okoli, posted September 13th. Nevertheless, control of our minds is central to the war being fought, and any successful defense in this war requires that we identify the threats to our mind and defend ourselves adequately against them. Otherwise, we are poorly placed to identify and defend against all of the other threats. Of course, using less invasive but still very effective weapons, the war to control your mind is ancient, and it is this component on which this article is focused, both because it is extremely advanced and is necessary if other components of the elite plan are to be fully implemented. Ancient? In fact, several authors have addressed this subject. That comes from the article, The Elite's 5,000-Year War on Your Mind is Climaxing. Can We Defeat It? By Robert J. Burroughs, posted September 13th.
These are just a few of the featured articles appearing last week on the Global Research website. Regular visitors to the site are encouraged to send monetary contributions by fax, mail, or online. Just go to globalresearch.ca and click Donate on the menu bar.
Been a record for wildfires in Canada, and the conclusion that more and more people are coming to is that this would not be happening if we paid attention to CO2-induced climate change decades ago. But as we look closer, there's, it seems, a human hand influencing the situation. We've got Peter Koenig joining us now. He's a geopolitical analyst and a former senior economist at the World Bank and the World Health Organization, where he worked for over 30 years around the world. And Peter's also, of course, a research associate of the Center for Research on Globalization. Welcome to this conversation, Peter. It's good to have you back on. Are you satisfied that this is the product of global warming, or is there something else going on in your mind?
Of course not. The whole global warming, CO2 caused global warming is a hoax. I think it would be better called a crime of monumental dimensions. It's an absolute lie and a crime that has been instilled in the population, in the world population, for at least 50 years. And actually, it came out of the Club of Rome's limit to growth. I mean, that's when they started talking about how do we limit the world's population, limits of growth. So we have to invent a new a few crises and justify population reduction in any way we can, so that the resources will be enough for the small elite. Of course, they didn't call it like that, but this blueprint, which is contained in this limit to growth, is still applicable today and is still used today. Just very recently, one of the authors came out, and a few months ago, I think, or a few weeks ago even, came out and said the world population must be reduced by, I forgot exactly the figure, but it's something above 90% of what we are today. And one of the top purposes of and instruments to do that is by saying we humans are the cause for global warming. And of course, then you have to demonstrate that there is global warming. And what we are seeing now is this artificially made global warming, which is, of course, not the case at all. It has nothing to do with CO2. CO2, in fact, is what we need. It's what sustains life on Earth. CO2 is absorbed by trees, especially by the rainforests, but also by any other plants and trees, and then given back as oxygen. And our life on Earth would be impossible without oxygen. So CO2 is actually, we need rather more than less of CO2 in order to sustain life on Earth. So everything else which is being said is a total lie and is manipulating people's minds. But this has been going on, as I said, for at least 50 years and escalated and is being geoengineered by Tavistock methods, so that people actually who are, some of them are real scientists. I know some of my colleagues who work with me in, for example, at WHO or at the World Bank, they firmly believe in this lie. So it's impossible to talk with them reason, because they cannot imagine that their authorities, their governments, has been lying to them for the last 50 years, for most of their lives. It's just unimaginable to admit that to oneself, but even though they know there's something wrong.
So, just to stop you there, but I mean, there is a lot of scientific research out there and the peer-reviewed articles that are basically committing to this. I mean, it's, you know, quite different from the COVID situation, of course, because it goes back for decades, right? So I just wonder if that's that doesn't influence your feelings one way or the other
about global warming caused by man-made CO2. No, not at all. No. I know this is an absolute hoax. There have been actually scientists, and ever more so during the past few months or even years, that came out and said, despite the fact that it may cost their career, that this has nothing to do with global warming. I mean, there's one Australian scientist, I forgot his name, who said already, I think 2 or 3 years ago, I read that he said that what human beings with their industry, with cars, with whatever they do, contribute to CO2 is less than 0.005%. So that certainly doesn't make any difference on the climate. Mm-hmm. However, what produces CO2 mostly is the sea itself. It gives off, you know, this balance. The sea, the different seas give off CO2 when it's needed, when the trees do not have enough to convert into oxygen. And if there is enough CO, you know, or maybe too much CO2, it will be absorbed by the oceans again. So this is pretty much in balance. There were actually some studies published years ago by NASA about that. And they probably have disappeared in the meantime, because it's no longer to be talked about. But this is for me is very clear. It doesn't influence me at all.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I think what is important to say also and to know that already in the 60s, then President Johnson, at the Harvard graduation ceremony, he told the students that by 2025, I think that's the year he mentioned, the US will control the weather worldwide. And then he added, he says, who controls the weather controls the world. You know, this is something which is maybe important to know, that these weather modifications or climate change, climate modifications, geoengineered modifications have started already in the 40s, in the 1940s. And in the meantime, in the last 80 years or so, these techniques have become highly sophisticated. Highly sophisticated meaning that now we're talking about DEW, directed energy weapons.
Yes.
Which is what caused many of these brush fires and other methods, and particularly what destroyed Lahaina in Hawaii.
Yeah. So this, you know, yeah, I just wanted to stop you there because I'm reminded of another interview I did back in March with David Halpin, and he was talking about actually an unrelated case, like unrelated to climate change. He was talking about why all of this attempts to essentially bury David Kelly, that's the person who was sort of prepared to speak too much about the weapons of mass destruction that Saddam Hussein had. And like one of the things he thought was relevant was some of the findings in Iraq, which seemed to point to, the strange, attacks on some of the people there, and even in survivors who had these strange attacks on them. And it sounded like it was the same kind of weapon as you're talking about now, or directed energy weapons, which is, I guess, fired from one point to another, and it just causes all this damage, kind of like a remote microwave or something like that. And I just found it interesting because you got a similar pattern. They're trying to keep it secret, but it wasn't directly related to global climate change. And this directed energy weapons, it goes back almost to the point of the nuclear weapons of Oppenheimer and so on. So that's an interesting development. Maybe you could just expand a little bit on what you know about the directed energy weapons and how they're taking are, I guess, elevating the number of wildfires that we're seeing.
Yes, I think what we can say today, I mean, there are lots of people who are also talking about the coming World War III, a nuclear World War III, which would eradicate basically life on Earth and something like that. I think this is, I mean, I hope it's not happening, and I believe strongly this is not going to happen. On the other hand, I believe that we have been for the last 3 years in World War III. That has started back basically on January 1, 2020, and is part of the UN Agenda 2030 and of the Great Reset, and in incorporates Klaus Schwab's dream of all digitization that he wants to implement, transhumanism and so on, which he actually said already about, I think, seven, 8 years ago. On Swiss-French TV, he said very clearly, by 2025, we all will have chips under our skin and can be manipulated, or he didn't say manipulated, but it can connect directly with computers and will become transhumans. Those are his words. Of course, by now, the technologies are so far advanced that we don't need chips anymore. We have been, those at least who have been vaccinated may have carbon oxide in them, and that's highly magnetic, and this magnetism is reacting very very sharply on to 5G waves, microwaves. So we are already there. We are already there.
Okay.
Now, with these directed energy weapons, they are actually, I think, replacing atomic energy, atomic wars, you know, nuclear wars, with this man-made climate change, weather change, modifications of climate and weather engineering. Is you can target countries that you want to eradicate. You can target countries that you want to cause enormous damage with earthquakes, which is also part of this of these technologies, and so you are much better. They are much better equipped with using these directed energy weapons, plus the climate modifications, than risking being erased, the elite being erased themselves by a nuclear war. And I think that's what we are in now. And it's if we don't wake up to it and try to get out of it and protest against it or stand up or start parallel societies, as are going on actually in France, or some movements like that in Spain too, in Greece too. So unless we win time in waking up, meaning becoming conscious of what is going on and admitting that we have been cheated and deceived all our lives, then we may be still able to get out of it. Otherwise, I think, frankly, there's a big risk that these what they are doing, what this small elite, which is backed by an enormous financial corporate financial digital and war industry machinery, will maybe succeed. And I hope not.
Yeah.
I really trust that we will come to conscience and can avoid that.
I was wondering if you could maybe speculate on how the this targeting of wildfires is it just about convincing us that climate change is real and we got to do something, or there might be other motives? For example, I hear that there's talk that in Maui, for example, they're trying to with all the burning that's going on there, it's going to help drive people into what they call smart cities, and that is part of the World Economic Forum, Klaus Schwab, Great Reset ideas, that more and more people are living in the smart cities. I mean, if you could expand on that and perhaps other motives that's driving this wave of wildfires.
Exactly. You're absolutely right. I mean, the wildfires is one thing. Of course, I have seen, I don't know whether the drone or satellite pictures on how the wildfires or some of the wildfires in Canada were started. You know, there were 7 points at one moment. There were 7 points where the fire lit up immediately at the same time. So it was very clear these are not nature caused fires. And but the wildfires, they have also multiple purposes. Of course, climate change is one of them. It convinces people that we are really living in climate change, and with that goes manufactured weather maps worldwide, where the temperatures are exaggerated. I have seen maps, for example, right now I'm in southern Spain. I've seen maps where southern Spain, the Malaga area, had 50 degrees and plus temperatures, which is no longer, which was never the case. So what they measured is the ground temperature and not the air temperature and so on. Another silly phenomenon, and it's not that silly if it comes from Bill Gates. He thinks there are too many trees. Trees are not good for the environment. So he wants to eradicate, I don't know how many million of hectares of rainforest. And of course, as long as the fewer rainforest you have, the less oxygen will be produced for life on Earth. So this is a fact. And if he wants to do that, and probably he has the means to do at least a lot of harm, then, you know, we are not waking up to it. It's very bad. And brush fires do exactly the same thing. They get rid of forest, which otherwise would have absorbed CO2 and given us, again, oxygen to sustain life. That's one of the things. The other thing that you mentioned with the 15-minute cities is also a fact. Actually, they have had, if I'm not wrong, on the 9th and 10th of September in Hawaii, I don't know where, a meeting to figure out what they will do with the Lahaina and with Maui in the future. And some of the pictures that I've seen, which are with FEMA already started building, are these sort of concentration camp looking small houses where they would put people that do not have any housing anymore, and particularly those who do not follow the orders that will come within short if we let them come. So yes, you're absolutely right. This is another agenda behind it. They wanted to use Maui and Lahaina, you know, was or still is the capital of the Kingdom of Hawaii. The kingdom actually never disappeared. The kingdom was overrun by the United States, and Hawaii was given the option either to remain, what did they call it, a protectorate sort of the United States, or become a state. And they decided the state, they're better off with the state than as a protectorate. Puerto Rico is sort of a protectorate. They have absolutely no rights, and they're still dominated by the United States. So Hawaii didn't want to be in that position. Even though they never really agreed, the kingdom never really agreed to be just integrated into the U.S. They didn't have a choice. So Lahaina is very important. Maui is very important because it was the island of the seat of the kingdom of Hawaii. So, and to transform Lahaina into a 15-minute city and to a fully digitized life is a plan that they could execute if we don't intervene before that, if people do not wake up. Of course, there are lots of indigenous Hawaiians who know, or most of them know what's going on and what has been going on during these directed energy weapons fires and so on. They know about it, and they were prevented actually to leave by the police, and probably more than 1,000 people died in these fires, and it is a horrendous crime. Yeah. Also, the governor of Hawaii not too long ago had a speech, and he talked about the plans. He talked very nicely about these horrendous plans foreseen for Maui and particularly Lahaina. Because many people probably they don't have the money to rebuild their houses, so they will sell them for a penny to the dollar or leave. But there are others who insist that they want to stay back in and want to take over their properties, and they're not being let in. I mean, this whole area, as you may have seen from videos and photographs, is circled off and ringed off and protected by police. Peter, the owners of their property cannot go back to see what's left or not left.
Peter Koenig is a geopolitical analyst and former senior economist at the World Bank and the World Health Organization, and also a research associate at the Center for Research on Globalization. Thanks for joining us, Peter Koenig.
Thank you very much, Michael. Thanks a lot for having me, and hope to see you again soon.
Yeah, take care.
You're listening to the Global Research News Hour, broadcasting from CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg and from partnering radio stations across Canada and the United States. Another article that might be of interest to listeners, also by Peter Koenig, is entitled Morocco, Earthquake Preceded by Mysterious Blue Lights, which discusses the first major earthquake in Morocco this past week, the worst to hit the region in over 100 years, and coinciding with the G20 summit in India, and also how such earthquakes can be guided by known environmental modification technology known as HARP, which stands for High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program. This is similar to the earthquake that hit Turkey earlier in the year and suggests new military dimensions that are not discussed at all in mainstream media.
So we have a lot of issues to be untangled around the whole examining the climate change situation. I mean, we had all these wildfires, particularly in Alberta, and that generated a fair degree of antagonism. And joining me now, we have a colleague living in Alberta. His name is Anthony Hall. He's professor emeritus of globalization studies at University of Lethbridge in Alberta, Canada. And he taught in the Canadian university system since 1982. Dr. Hall has published a big two-volume publishing project at McGill Queen's University Press entitled The Bowl with One Spoon. He's you know, contributing regularly to global research. And he also has a Substack now, which you should check out. And he's got a really interesting article, which I think that might be interesting to, you know, good place to start. So, and also he's a research associate of the Center for Research on Globalization. Good afternoon, Tony. It's a pleasure having you back on the show. Welcome.
Hi, Michelle. Michael. Excuse me. I'm in the Anglo world. Michael.
For sure. I myself have been a serious devotee to fighting climate change really for about two thirds of my life. I'm starting to get some difficult, you know, having to address things like the whole business about, you know, all of the military exercises that Michelle writes about and how that might be conflicting things. But I'm wondering, were you skeptical right from the start, like way back in the 1980s, I think it was, or did something, you know, since the 1980s grow on you and realize, hey, this isn't right?
Yeah, so I'm going to look at this issue, especially from the ground here of Alberta, because Premier Daniel Smith is going head to head with Guy Beault and Justin Trudeau on climate change. And there seems to be a hit, an attempt from the federal government to more or less abolish oil and gas as we've known it, which is based here in Alberta. So I've been looking at it from that perspective. Now, on the bigger question of what about climate change, I'm aware of it over, you know, decades that this has been an issue. My tendency was to sort of go along with it and think that it was probably a credible way to look at what's happening in the world and how industrialization is affecting the world. But since 2020, and since looking at the schmozzle, the dishonesty about the science, following the science having to do with the COVID-19, you know, it pretty much seems to me clear it's some kind of scam. And, you know, none of the things that were proposed as the things we should do, like masking, like distancing, and, you know, most of all, the injections, all those things turned out to be a nightmare. So the whole concept that, you know, well, there's esteemed scientists and they decide these things among themselves and they're honest people. You start to see, no, it doesn't work that way. There is science for sale to the highest bidder. So, you know, we pretty much look at many things through a different lens now. When we just have to sort of deal with the fact that government has shown itself to be pretty much our enemy. And, you know, there does seem to be this preoccupation with culling the population, containing carbon. I don't know why is carbon the bad guy? Carbon is, you know, so essential to life. I have been, you know, looking into the underlying arguments about why we have this concept that, you know, carbon must be somehow captured and hidden off and sequestered, and CO2 in the atmosphere is going to cause the world to burn up, and we can trust the people who are telling this, because of course they're very high scientists, and there's thousands of them. But now we have thousands of, you know, naysayers. There is no consensus. You know, there's no consensus on a lot of things. There's no consensus on 9/11, what really happened on 9/11. And climate change, you know, it just doesn't stand up to scrutiny.
Well, and just this let me stop you there for a second, because one of the things that the scientists, you know, professors at the University of Winnipeg and so on will say, well, look at the like there's decades worth of peer reviewed journalistic articles which show that there is a link between carbon dioxide and the rate of climate change. Okay, so
there's also, you know, scientists who write peer-reviewed articles who don't agree with that. And, you know, just on the face of it, the idea that carbon is the enemy, well, wait a minute, carbon is the basis of life. Plant food, plants like to ingest CO2. And they give back something called oxygen. And, you know, you to make carbon the ultimate enemy, and all the things that are going on that are, you know, deleterious to the environment, and all the pollution that we face, and the contamination, and all the lack of regulation, and, you know, contamination of our food, our water, our air, you know, our schools, our media, our courts, you know, and on and on. And peer review is really been discredited. You know, the Lancet, the New England Journal of Medicine, you know, the Surgisphere scam, you know, trying to make it seem that hydroxychloroquine is very dangerous, a complete scam to create a non-existent research project. It gets published in the Lancet, which is, you know, peer-reviewed. How we have been doing things in the past has been exposed. And so you don't take... So when you rhyme off, you know, for generations, there's these peer review articles, and we all know that peer review is cleanly, and it works, and we have honest people doing this at the university. I just don't see it that way anymore, Michelle.
Well, Michael. Yeah, but you know, I mean, there are so many. I mean, yes, there are some peer-reviewed articles that go the other way, but they're minuscule compared to the large number of examinations that report this.
You're very woke, Michael. You are very woke. You were woke last time when we talked about COVID, the injections, and I said, you know, they're gene modifying. They modify your genes. And you said, oh, no, the peer reviews, the things say it doesn't do it. You know, I think at this point, I don't want to try to prove, you know, your commitment for decades and say, you know, you're wrong. I'm sure you have some insight into it, but I'm the one being interviewed here.
Okay.
And I'm describing it how I see it. And honestly, you know, are you woke? Like, there is this whole thing that has happened in the university where, you know, diversity and equity and what's the other one? Inclusion. You know, that there isn't any longer a meritocracy. And that has collapsed now. And so I'm trying to look at it. I'm proud to be an academic.
Okay,
and I do speak from the position of a tenured professor, a senior tenured professor, a professor emeritus, in fact. So, you know, you can lecture me about what's going on at the universities, Michael, but you know, I have my own way to view it. And I see a lot of corruption at the university, and I've experienced a lot of corruption, and I've experienced a lot of people giving in to the highest bidder and taking the money and, you know, betraying the truth. And so I'm that's how I'm coming to see climate change. And the, you know, the idea that we're going to save the world with wind power and solar power and battery power, and we're just going to walk away from the oil and gas resources, which has provided, you know, fantastic livelihoods for working people from all over Canada a long time.
I mean, there are, you're seeing like, you know, like this is like Alberta, in Alberta, oil and gas, I mean, is a major source of investment, and you want to replace it with solar panels and windmills and so on. And this sort of scenario happens around the planet. I mean, they haven't had a place in, I think it's Denmark, where farmers are having to change their patterns, you know, get rid of the nitrogen, which is also apparently
a scam, man. This is the most fruitful food producer in the world, the biggest exporter of food from this tiny little country. And we should be going to that country and learning from the farmers. Mm-hmm. And instead, we've got like Sri Lanka. Did you hear what happened to that economy? Like the truth of the matter is, if we're going to get away from oil and gas, which is very efficient and muscular and, you know, relatively cheap to produce, and go into sun and solar, which are very ephemeral, and batteries, the reality is this is an effort to push people into poverty, to undermine them, just like the jab went into their arms, not to help them and to prevent them from catching a deadly disease, but to introduce genetic modifications and transhumanism. We are in the midst of an incredibly unusual, unprecedented level of assault on the human condition. And so the idea that they're going to save us from climate change, but then introduce a more ecologically balanced, they're not in the business of doing that. They're in the business of enfeebling people, of getting people in some kind of digital prison where a central bank digital currency and digital ID gives the people at the very center to centralize power so people can turn off your money supply and decide, you know, if your behavior, your social credit score, you know, entitles you to buy this or not buy that. Or, I went out running and I breathed out a lot of carbon, so I've got to, you know, take some penalties for going out running and breathing carbon. If you can do so in a little soundbite, explain to me why carbon is the enemy.
Yeah, well, you know, this is starting to be like the actions of Trudeau and Guilbeault versus Danielle Smith and Alberta. It seems as if it's, in fact, I think you said it in your article that it's going to be the biggest showdown since the National Energy Program introduced by Trudeau Senior. Right. And the outsiders, they see Albertans as climate skeptics and seeing it. But, you know, you indicate it actually relates to constitutional, federal and provincial conflicts. In other words, we're seeing it from very different vantage points. I mean, I don't know if you could just give us a short, really short snapshot of what, you know, the difference in our perspectives. Looking at this.
And there is a very real developing independence movement in Alberta, and a sense that that it's just intolerable living in Canada the way it is right now. And there's something called the Alberta Sovereignty Act, which is law now, and it has that word sovereignty. A lot of people look at Quebec in Alberta and they say, you know, Alberta gets all kinds of transfer payments from the oil and gas sector for equalization, go to Quebec. Quebec has lots of oil and gas, but they don't want to develop it. It would be good for the people of Quebec to have better jobs and a higher category of living, but they like just, taking the transfer payments from the oil and gas in Alberta. So there, you know, there is a constitutional basis to Canada. And the Alberta oil and gas industry has been the subject of a lot of tension within Canadian federalism. And I would say we're launched now in a case that is going to, you know, go beyond what we've seen before in our history. This is way more serious than the National Energy Program of Pierre Trudeau, because there does seem to be an idea that, okay, we're going to clamp down on carbon emissions. And then, well, basically, if you're going to say you can only release this much carbon and you've got to very quickly lower it over in a short time period, that is in a way saying we're going to tell you how much oil and gas you can produce, because the production is obviously going to be connected to the emissions. And it does say in the Constitution 92A that you know, the provinces will be in charge of production. So there's all kinds of sword rattling on both sides about going to court. And the reality is, you know, Canada was set up by the British Empire with the concept that Ottawa, that the central government in Canada would be kind of like the master government, the higher government. The national government has a parliament, the provincial governments have legislatures, the national government has a governor general, the provincial governments have lieutenant governors, the national government can disallow provincial legislation, the federal government could simply disallow the Alberta Sovereignty Act. There's a lot of reassurance given by Daniel Smith, Premier Daniel Smith, and others in Alberta that it's all going to go our way. But, you know, the federal government basically appoints the judges. Even the judges in the provincial system are appointed by the federal government. They certainly, you know, appoint the Liberals under Trudeau make a real spectacle of, you know, appointing people who give a lot of money to judge, you know, judges' roles. As far as I see, the judiciary in Canada is kind of a basket case ever since, you know, they decided to Peckford's questioning about the charter is moot. You know, we had this big charter that we've heard about, you know, since 1982 when the Constitution Act 1982 happened, including the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, but it didn't make a hill of difference through the COVID restrictions and mandates and such. It seems we have rights until we need them. And then, you know, the judiciary lines up with the federal government and shuts it down. So I am predicting that, you know, the Albertans are not going to walk away from oil and gas with this fantasy that, oh, it'll be okay. You can have wind power and solar power. Like, no, you know, that's ephemeral. That's, you know, basically, this climate change scam is saying you're going to be poor. You're not going to have the food coming out of, you know, the Netherlands, the greatest food producer in the world. Oh, no, because we can't have fertilizer. Making fertilizer is bad for the climate. You know, that just as there was a logic to, or an illogic, or a lethal logic to this production of, you know, they were bioweapons. They were military bioweapons. And the whole program of creating these injections happened under the auspices of the Pentagon. And it is a program of depopulation. And not only depopulation, but make us enfeeble us, make us more subject to the control of the richest and most powerful people who, you know, move in and around the World Economic Forum, but it's not the World Economic Forum. It's the people who control the banking system. There is a very malevolent, predatory movement, and climate change is being set up to be the basis for climate change lockdowns, you know, social credit scoring. If there might have been some explanation for it in the early stages that is benign. And incidentally, my reading about the history of the environmental movement and how it was pushed into this climate change or opposition to global warming, it was a Rockefeller job. You know, that they have been the funders and the They want to control all of energy.
Yeah,
and
I certainly found that myself. But you know, it seems like now you've got the Canada as a participant with NATO, that galvanizes that this switching away. I mean, at the same time as what the, the billionaires want, and yet the BRICS countries, that which is kind of an alternative, they are securing a lot of that oil and gas. So it's a strange dynamic taking place. But what do you think in terms of options for Alberta? I mean, could they
possibly... Well, wait a second. You're not going to run by that by me, and I'm going to, you know, I'll get to the to Alberta. But wait a minute. Do you know that Montreal is going to be the basis, the headquarters of the of NATO's climate change studies? Because NATO has a big commitment on climate change.
Yeah.
And they are establishing, you know, an expensive headquarters for climate change studies in Montreal, Canada, at the behest of Trudeau. And that when we conduct war against Russia, well, we're going to do so with the latest technology, so that as we murder the people, we will do so in harmony with, you know, the environment, and we won't disrupt climate. We will murder people with our military, our native military, in line with the very highest requirements to stop climate change. If that isn't an absurdity, I don't know what is. Are you aware of that?
Well,
did you know about that?
Well, also at the same time, I mean, when you any time you go to war or have any kind of military conflict, I mean, they've got the NATO pilot, the U.S. military is the biggest producer of carbon dioxide in the world. So I don't know.
Yeah, like war is really about destroying the environment.
Yeah.
And they talk about climate change in isolation from geoengineering. And we're supposed to believe, oh, Maui, there's a proof that climate change is happening. No, Maui is a very clear description, example of, you know, directed energy weapons, which, you know, transform houses into rubble, you know, white ash rubble with trees standing beside them and all of that. And, you know, the same with this outbreak of fires in Canada, like the geoengineering, military use of geoengineering and the military use of everything. Like if you were authentic about wanting to stop climate change, you'd say, well, how about we stop war on the way there? You know, because that is one of the worst, most reckless thing you can do in the environment. But the climate change movement doesn't talk about geoengineering because, oh, this is all secret. And, oh, this is just conspiracy theorists. Oh, they see the skies full of grayed stuff
in the
sky.
It's a huge elephant
in the room.
Those are
just conspiracy theories.
Yeah.
What's that?
Well, it's a huge elephant in the room that nobody's preferring to look at. But I mean, I know in a previous article, there's a fact, I mean, when you mentioned the fires in Alberta and then the Canadian public, the outsiders, they were getting a steady diet. It was horrible and so on. But I was wondering at the grassroots level in Alberta, the people who are experiencing it. I mean, could you talk about the experiences of the local people and the
well,
people?
I did, you know, write an article in my Substack, and I interviewed local people, and they basically, you know, didn't trust the authorities. They came to see that a lot of this was arson. Was it arson, just people doing it for fun, or was it, you know, directed arson? It just happened that there was a provincial election taking place through that time. And I think generally speaking, the thoughtful people, the one third of people who, you know, do things like maybe check out global research from time to time, you know, they're on to the fact that, you know, that we're not being squared to. And so even Guilbeault, you know, when I heard Guilbeault saying, well, obviously climate change is real. Look at all the fires. I mean, they don't want to get any longer into the depth of the discussion about, well, what is so wrong with all this carbon? Like, you know, and it's fallen. The level of the discussion has fallen into, see, there's fires happening all around. There must be, it must be climate change. You know, there's no science to that. And in fact, you know, it's kind of reveals a kind of antipathy to science to say, look, there's fires going around. It must be climate change. I mean, you know, you do the history of the world and the climate, you know, goes up and down. It seems to have a lot to do with what's going on with the sun. The sun isn't just a constant thing. It goes through cycles itself. It wasn't that long ago that the fear was an ice age was coming. And to build up this idea, oh my God, if we don't give the government a total license to tell us everything we can and cannot do, the world's going to burn up and we're all going to, die. And what's so Greta, what's her name, constantly nattering at us. We've got to go back to basics, like net zero. Do you have any, that is a meaningless phrase. Come down to kind of nonsense phrases, as if, we get to net zero and then we're in some kind of nirvana and, we're going to find restoration. We're going to find, some kind of harmony with nature. We all have a longing for, a harmony with nature, and the industrial system has not been developed in a way that is very harmonious with the cycles of life. And that is a good way to look at it. But then to try to boil it all down and say, there's one big enemy above all others, carbon, CO2, just happens to be plant food, just happens to be the main ingredient of life, carbon, but we're going to make that the enemy. Forget about war and forget about, all the different kinds of pollution and the oceans and the plastics and all the chemical toxification, and just forget about that. Just pay attention to carbon, because that's going to save us. It's such a scam. It's just unbelievable, really.
Okay. Well, Anthony Hall, I'm afraid we've run out of time, but I want to thank you for being available to address these issues and basically reveal more about the attitudes within Alberta and where things are going between the province and the rest of the country.
Yeah, we could have gotten a lot more, but it's coming out in Global Research CA. I've started writing about it. It's a new theme of mine, and I'm going to stick with it. So,
okay.
Watch Global Research CA.
Okay.
And thanks to Michelle Chalsadowski, who said, write about this. You're in Alberta. Write about what's going on. Write about the Constitution. I'm a Canadian historian. I'm in a position to look at the Constitution and interpret it and anticipate what might be coming in that sphere, in courts and findings and stuff.
Anthony Hall, Professor Emeritus of Globalization Studies at the University of Lethbridge in Alberta. He writes for Substack, and as you mentioned, he's a regular contributor to Global Research.
So for the second time, we've had a guest which talks about the unreliability of peer-reviewed research, which, if accurate, it paints a pretty shocking portrait of science in the 20th and 21st century. On a future show, I will try to organize a debate about two knowledgeable professors who come from opposite ends of the climate change debate. I might also add that, again, from the opposite side of the debate, in Winnipeg, there was a climate justice sing-along just on the steps of the Manitoba Legislative Building on Broadway in Winnipeg, just ended at 1 o'clock. Organized by the Manitoba Energy Justice Coalition. This is a group which is putting out a call for a just transition to keep global warming below 1.5 Celsius while improving social equity. So that's it for this week's show. Next week, we will have updates on the situation in the war in Ukraine and efforts to bring that war to an end here in Canada. Join us then. You're listening to the Global Research News Hour, a program funded by the Center for Research on Globalization and produced in collaboration with campus community radio station CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg on the traditional lands of the Anishinaabe, Innu, Oji-Cree, Dene, and Dakota, the birthplace of the Métis Nation and the heart of the Métis Nation homeland. The show airs on partner radio stations across Canada and the United States and is available for streaming or download at the site globalresearch.ca. To leave feedback on this program, please email globalresearchnewshour@gmail.com. I've been your host, Michael Welch. Thanks once again for joining us.